know, I don't know if you followed what happened recently with the New York Times and this reporter, Sarah Jung. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am.
I mean, this is such an amazing example of the hypocrisy and the complete lack of logic that liberals have embraced when it comes to the topic of racism. I guess for anybody who's listening who doesn't know, there's this new reporter at the New York Times. Her name is Sarah Jung. She's an Asian-American woman. And she has, it's been discovered, about 5 years going back on Twitter worth of really, really ugly racist tweets against white people. And what's sort of, and the New York Times has made a decision to stand by her because, and their explanation is, well, as an Asian-American woman, she is by default the victim of racism in this country. And so she was simply responding to racists with her own racism, and therefore it's justified. But what's interesting is Candace Owens replicated some of these tweets that Sarah Jung wrote, word for word, verbatim, replicated these tweets. But instead of the word white, she replaced it with either black or Jewish. So one of Sarah Jung's tweets were something along the lines of, it's amazing how much I love to be cruel to old white men. And Candace Owens wrote, it's amazing how much I love to be cruel to old black women. And Candace Owens was banned from Twitter for hate speech.
Yes.
But Sarah Jung didn't have any reprimand whatsoever for her tweet.
It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Hello, folks. I'm so excited. I have a special guest for this interview. I'm with Brandon Strock. And you may have seen Brandon on television because he has gained a lot of fame. He is the New York City hairdresser who is responsible for the Pan Walkaway movement. I met Brandon at the opening of Dinesh D'Souza's new film, Death of a Nation, and we struck up a conversation. We have a lot in common. We were both Democrats at one point in our lives. So, Brandon, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much, Carol. It's really, really awesome to be talking to you.
Well, the feeling is mutual. I'd like for you to tell the listeners about your background and what it was that led you to reach the point of frustration that you decided to walk away from the Democratic Party.
Well, my background is that I grew up in a tiny little town in Nebraska. It was a very sort of, you know, rural farm country and obviously very, you know, kind of conservative. And I grew up in a conservative family. But I myself was always a Democrat, lifelong Democrat voter, lifelong liberal. And I always say that I was sort of a Democrat by default because, as I'm sure you can probably identify with, the Democratic Party does a really great job at marketing themselves towards minority groups in America. And I'm a gay man, and I definitely fell for that slick advertising from the Democratic Party. And so I always voted Democrat and never really questioned it much, to be honest with you. And it was really as the years went by, and I always sort of surrounded myself with liberal friends, and I always lived in liberal cities. I live in New York City. But I started to see how the identity politics and the political correctness were not only just taking hold, but I mean, really taking over. And I didn't like what I was seeing because to me, it wasn't as though these things were making the world a better place or helping anybody or bringing us closer together. In fact, I was seeing that people were becoming more divided. People were becoming more hostile, I think, towards each other, you know, between these different identity groups, and I was becoming more and more uncomfortable with it. And then I started to see how the identity politics were really becoming oppressive in a way. I mean, for me, I knew that I was getting to the point where I was really, really questioning the good nature of liberalism when it became like, you know, well, people were not even allowing other people to talk, you know, or it was like, right, you shouldn't even be talking because you're a straight white man, you know, yes. And I'm like, well, or whatever. I mean, a white woman or a straight person.
Or
and I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
A black conservative. Oh, yeah, that's real. Oh, they really don't like it when you're a minority and you go conservative. That really makes them angry. Yeah, so, I mean, absolutely. So that's what I started to see with liberalism. Now,
but wait, let me stop you for a minute. How old are you? I know you're kind of young, and so you talk as if you have had all of these years to watch this process unfold.
Right, well, that's because I'm older, I think, than I look. I'm actually 41.
Really? Okay. But still, that's kind of young.
Yeah.
But when it's compared to
my
age.
I'll take it. I'll take it. Yeah, no, I mean, I think some people think I'm about 30. So then they're like, well, what do you mean your whole life? And I'm like, well, I've got a few extra years, you know?
Well, I think it's really interesting, too, that age gap, because a lot of Americans, you know, we really value our First Amendment rights. And with the young generation, it seems that they're being taught that free speech only means free speech to people who agree and think the way I do.
Yes. Well, and in general, Carol, that's a really good point because, I mean, if we're even just going to focus on the youth in general, I think that there's what I'm noticing in general, not just on the topic of the First Amendment, but amongst liberals, there seems to be this attitude of taking all of the liberties that America offers for granted in general. I mean, they seem to think that we'll always have enough money. We'll always have enough success. There will always be enough. That's why they think, oh, socialism will work out fine, and, you know, socialized medicine will work out fine. Like, they always think that everything's going to be fine because I think they just take for granted, you know, because it's actually funny when you think about it. It's because we live in such a state of luxury in this country, and we have so much. But these are things that we had to work for, we had to fight for, and we have to fight to protect them. But they just sort of take these things for granted, you know, like, oh, yeah, we can become socialists, and who needs the First Amendment, and who needs it, you know? And it's like, you know, no, these things are not invulnerable. I mean, we could lose everything. We have to protect these things.
Now, Brandon, I take it that you were not a member of Occupy Wall Street. Did you participate in Occupy Wall Street?
I didn't, but that's only because I can't go for 2 or 3 days without taking a shower, and I hate being in a tent. I'm definitely somebody who needs to be sleeping in air conditioning and have a shower. I mean, no, honestly, I was so much a liberal at that point, I probably would have joined Occupy Wall Street without even asking what it really was about. But I wasn't at the time, no. But I probably would have.
Well, what about your parents? Were they more conservative when it came to social economic issues? Or what were they like?
Yes.
Or are like?
So I grew up in a Catholic household. I went to Catholic school my whole life, and my parents are Christian conservatives. Now, they're not like religious zealots or anything, and it wasn't like an oppressive household by any means. But the basis, I think, of their conservatism was sort of stemmed in faith, and I think that they're just very stereotypical, patriotic, you know, America first kind of conservatives.
Well, I mean, a lot of us are, and I'm glad that the vast majority of Americans, I believe, are people that love our country, and I think that the identity politics, the multiculturalism, the insanity comes from the university campuses, and unfortunately, they've graduated a lot of people that are out there in the world working for corporations, working for government, that are pushing the ideas that have become so absurd.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I always say that these liberalism sort of ingrains itself into our society and our culture, I think, through the education system, through the entertainment industry and, of course, the media. I mean, these are the ways that they really get people. But, you know, I believe that as the Democratic Party has become more and more desperate, because people really are starting to wake up to what's going on and to the lies that they've told and, you know, this how they really do use these minority groups. And I feel like at this point they've gotten so desperate that the new groups that they're going after are, of course, illegal immigrants, and they're really targeting the youth. They're going after teenagers at this point, trying to get them, you know, while they're just starting to form their young adult opinions.
Are you talking about teenagers? They're going after kids in middle school. That starts in middle school.
Yeah. No, you're right. I guess what I was thinking when I said that was about, you know, this year we saw that the horrible Parkland shooting in Florida.
Yes.
And, I mean, but gosh, I mean, it was like 5 minutes after that happened, they were right there making it a Second Amendment issue and having that CNN town hall meeting, getting those kids all riled up. And then, you know, and somehow these kids who had just experienced a trauma, you know, were just, literally, like, days later, they had a big march planned, and they had a Second Amendment, you know, anti-Second Amendment. And it's like, that's what they're doing. You know, they're targeting these young kids now and trying to make it so that the second they turn 18 years old, they're ready to vote Democrat.
Well, the political left, they are shameless when it comes to exploiting people and taking advantage of crises. And we see that whenever there's a tragedy, whether it's a race tragedy or something like a shooting, they're right there with their organizers.
Yes. Well, and let's not forget that a good amount of the time, it doesn't even have to be a real tragedy. I mean, they'll just say it. Right after Donald Trump was elected, that was one of the most horrifying times, I think, of my life. Because, you know, I was still a liberal. I voted for Hillary. And I was devastated when Donald Trump was elected. But there the liberal media was, right? I mean, from the moment that he was elected, coming out with the stories, talking about hate crime spiking, talking about how Jews are in danger, black people are in danger, gay people are in danger. I mean, it was just like every day, new stories about, you know, and who even knows at this point if they were true, but I mean, they would talk about, you know, swastikas being spray painted all over the cities and
And a lot of that's done by members of the groups that are complaining, that when you follow some of those hate crimes to the end, you find out that the person reported the crime. These are not really crimes, but incidents, you know, of graffiti or intimidation, that often it's a member of the group that reported it. That's the guilty part.
Right. Exactly, because I think that their justification is, I think in their minds it's like, well, these things are happening all the time anyway, so I'm going to do this so that we can draw attention to this thing that's, you know, but it's like, is it really happening all the time? Like, because most of us are not seeing that.
Well, we need to take a break, and after the break, I'd like for you to tell the listeners, you know, what was the turning point for you? You know the story of Paul on the road to Damascus, so we'd like to hear your turning point after this break.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, I'm back with Brandon, and he's going to share with us the turning point, how he reached the point that he actually walked away from the Democratic Party, and I'm going to be quiet for a while and let him talk.
Okay, so it was after the election of Donald Trump, and as I was saying earlier, you know, I was just absolutely horrified that he had been elected. And I also said earlier that I was starting to see how the political correctness and the identity politics were really taking over and becoming so divisive. Well, suddenly these two things sort of came into alignment for me. because the reaction to Trump's election was so strong and so hysterical, and I myself was a part of it to a certain degree, and I was going on social media constantly asking people, you know, because I grew up in this little town in Nebraska, and I knew that many people I grew up with had voted for him, and so I was asking, you know, how could you do this? How could you vote for this monster, this racist, this bigot, this man who stood before a crowd of cheering people and mocked a reporter's disability? And finally, someone that I grew up with reached out to me, and she sent me a private message with a link in it to a YouTube video. And the YouTube video was labeled "Debunking That Trump Mocked the Disabled Reporter." And when I saw this, I kind of became enraged because I thought, oh, this is another one, you know, gaslighting propaganda from the right. And I thought, you know, I'm going to watch it so that I can then yell at her for being so stupid for believing this piece of propaganda. And I watched it, and it was this compilation of footage of Donald Trump doing the exact same voice and the exact same gesture that he did when he, quote unquote, mocked the disabled reporter. He was doing the same voice and gesture numerous times in numerous circumstances over the years, imitating numerous people. But the commonality was that in each situation, he was imitating somebody who had been caught in a lie or somebody who had done something shady, or they were groveling. And it became clear that he wasn't mocking this person's disability at all. I mean, the person was disabled. But what he was doing was mocking the fact that this person who happened to be disabled had been caught in a lie. And it was really mind-blowing to me because I thought, well, it's almost as if the media took this moment out of context and made me believe something that wasn't true. And I, Carol, I know it sounds so stupid, but I didn't know that they did that. I mean, I really
didn't
know
that the media lied.
No, I didn't. Well, I really thought, you know, I thought the right-wing media lied, but because, you know, that's what I had always been told, I guess, you know, I believed, but I didn't, I thought that CNN and MSNBC and New York Times and the Huffington Post, I thought that they were trustworthy. I thought that they, I didn't know they had an agenda.
Well, I think they've gotten worse. I think they got worse during the Obama years.
Much worse. And even much worse now. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before, I don't think. But it was okay. So having that moment for me opened my eyes to the possibility that this is something that they do. And then I started researching more, and I started finding more and more examples of ways in which they had done this, particularly in his campaign. One example of many was I found a video of black people who supported Trump and went to his rally, and when CNN showed up, they cut them out of the shot intentionally so that it only appeared that there were white people there at the rally. And like in this video, they were like, yep, we were standing right here, and CNN just came and saw us, and they moved 15 feet over so that we wouldn't be in the shot. And I was like, wow. And it started to become clear to me, you know, back to the identity politics, it started to become clear to me what was going on here, is that they realized that liberals are triggered by social injustice. Liberals, you know, supposedly hate racism, hate homophobia, hate, you know, discrimination based off of gender. And they went into this thinking, let's paint this guy as the most racist, most sexist, most homophobic person who's ever lived. Even if it's not true, let's just make it true. And that's exactly what they were trying to do. And they were very effective at it, effective to the point where lots of people in this country still believe it and are currently losing their minds.
Well, they do believe it.
Because of it, yeah.
Well, Brendan, have you ever read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals or done any study of cultural Marxism?
That is next on my list. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell you I haven't read it yet.
Oh,
but it's
no,
like,
you don't
at this point...
You shouldn't be
so
embarrassed.
So many people at this point have said that I need to read this, that it's like, I don't think I'm going to talk to anyone else until I've read that book, because I have to read it. Yes.
Well, Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, is a short book, and it's easy to read. And if you ever start exploring, I can give you some of the backstory, but all of this stuff is cultural Marxism. They've had an agenda, you know, for generations, and because they've been able to install certain people in key positions in the media, in academia, in government, in just every aspect of American society, that's how they've been able to deceive so many people and to keep us at each other's throats.
Yes. Yeah, and I see that very clearly now. The thing that's so funny, too, is, you know, I don't know if you followed what happened recently with the New York Times and this reporter, Sarah Jung. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am.
I mean, this is such an amazing example of the hypocrisy and the complete lack of logic that liberals have embraced when it comes to the topic of racism. I guess for anybody who's listening who doesn't know, there's this new reporter at the New York Times. Her name is Sarah Jung. She's an Asian American woman, and she has, it's been discovered, about 5 years going back on Twitter worth of really, really ugly racist tweets against white people. And what's sort of, and the New York Times has made a decision to stand by her because, and their explanation is, well, as an Asian American woman, she is by default the victim of racism in this country. And so she was simply responding to racists with her own racism, and therefore it's justified. But what's interesting is Candace Owens, who I think everybody knows, but in case they don't, is a black conservative. She, the other day on Twitter, replicated some of these tweets that Sarah Jung wrote, word for word, verbatim, replicated these tweets. But instead of the word white, she replaced it with either black or Jewish. So one of Sarah Jung's tweets were something along the lines of, it's amazing how much I love to be cruel to old white men. And Candace Owens wrote, it's amazing how much I love to be cruel to old black women. And Candace Owens was banned from Twitter for hate speech.
Yes, I mean...
But mm-hmm. Sarah Jung didn't have any reprimand whatsoever for her tweet.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've heard the argument that's been repeated in academia ever since I've been around, you know, which has been a while, that racism is only something that white people can do, that black people and people of color cannot be racist because you have to have power to be a racist.
Yes, I've heard this definition, this reimagining of the definition of racism, yes.
And it's so ridiculous because we've had a black president, we've had two black attorney generals, we have black people in positions of power throughout our society, and certainly women and Asians, to argue that members of those groups cannot be racist or they cannot discriminate because they are a member of a victimized group. That is ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous, and I also don't understand why we would want to embrace such an ideal where we've made it allowable to just be completely hostile and contemptuous towards a whole group of people. And that, I mean, it was bad enough when our country had so much racism towards black people, but at least at that time we had a word for it, which was racism. Now it's like open season on white people. We don't even have a word for it because we can't call it racism anymore.
Well, I mean, it's discrimination, and white people are protected by the Civil Rights Act. And if I'm the only person that's willing to say it, I'm saying it, that white people are protected by the Civil Rights Act. And if it's wrong to discriminate against blacks and Asians and Hispanics, it's also wrong to discriminate against whites.
Well, right. And, you know, I think statistically, I think that the white population decreases a little bit every year. So, I mean, at some point, it probably will balance out, or even possibly white people will become a minority in America. And so it's like by the time we reach that point, will these attitudes be so ingrained in our culture that it's okay to be hostile and contemptuous towards white people? I mean, how will that change then when we actually do become a minority?
Well, Brian,
like at that point?
Brandon, yeah. The new data shows that whites have the highest mortality rate of any group in America, and if the current trends hold, they will be a minority by the year 2040, and they are already minorities in parts of the country. And so you can see that if we continue down the path that we're following now, where it's okay to discriminate against certain groups in harmful ways, that we will have racial clashes, because I don't think that people will just roll over and do nothing. And I've written, you know, a book on the new white nationalism. I believe the alt-right, a lot of the pushback that we're getting is because of white people feeling that they are being marginalized, that they're being discriminated against, that people are not defending their rights.
Yes, I agree. And this is another thing that I think is so... I didn't see this at the time when I was a person who was on the left, but now I see it so clearly. I mean, the behavior of people on the left is actually quite capable of creating the very thing that they claim to be so against. I mean, I think that a lot of people on the left actually create racists.
They do.
I think they actually create homophobic people. I mean, I think people who didn't start out having a problem with gay people, who didn't start out having a problem with people of color, it's like you beat them down and you beat them down and you beat them down long enough, and you tell them, you're a bigot, you owe me this, I can treat you however I want to because I'm the one discriminated against, and you're... I mean, after you do that long enough, it's like, of course they're going to hate you, you know? And it's like, you caused that to happen.
Well, I think that
that's
some,
what I think.
You're right, and the attacks on the monuments, the Confederate monuments, I mean, that fueled the clash in Charlottesville and around the country. As
yes.
soon as that happened, you saw people buying up Confederate memorabilia. And so it really did the
right.
opposite of what people said they were trying to accomplish.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. And the Charlottesville was, it was just another example, I think, of the media getting into something and whipping everybody up into a frenzy and creating another narrative. And see, this is another thing. This, like, you know, the Antifa and all of the violence and the fascism that takes place on the left, which of course the left will never acknowledge. I mean, after Charlottesville, I remember so many people that I was friends with getting on social media and just throwing an absolute tantrum, screaming, "If you don't denounce the KKK right now, then you might as well unfriend me." I'm sitting here thinking, first of all, who is for the KKK? I mean, I don't know. I have never known anyone in my entire life who says, oh, yeah, the KKK is awesome. So, like, the idea that we now in 2018 have to publicly stand up and denounce the KKK in order to prove that we're not pro-KKK. But in the meantime, the left would never, they still don't denounce Antifa or
yeah,
any of the violence,
don't.
Any of these acts of vandalism, anything that takes place on this. They, and if you ask them about it, what they'll say is, well, they're fighting fascism. They're doing a good thing.
And
Dinesh
has shown that they are the fascists.
Are the fascists. That's exactly right.
Well, Brandon, we are going to take a break. And after the break, I want you to tell the listeners just some of the things you have experienced, as well as how they can reach you and how they can support your movement.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
I'm back with Brandon, and he's going to share with us about some of the things that he's experienced since he left the Democratic Party and started this new walkaway movement.
So, as I was saying before, my eyes had been open to the truth about what was happening on the left and what the media was doing, and that really kind of got me sent on this quest for more knowledge and to find out what the truth was. And so I started really researching, political issues and finding out what the conservative point of view was. And the more I took in, the more I ingested, the more I realized that conservatism just made so much more sense to me. And the more I tried to talk about this to people, the more I had friends that started to turn their backs on me. They would lash out on me. Some of them attacked me on social media saying that I was doing drugs, that I was having a nervous breakdown, that I had lost my mind or that I had been brainwashed. I mean, you name it. And I started to kind of exist in this state of anxiety because I felt like every time I would try to express an opinion, because God knows, especially living in New York City, you can't get through a cup of coffee without somebody bringing up Donald Trump and how the sky is falling.
You're right.
He makes his way into every conversation.
Even when you
and
get off
half
the plane.
The time, yes. And it's like, you know, 99% of the time, the things that you're hearing aren't even true. And you know they're not true. I mean, you'll be sitting there and someone, oh, can you believe now they're putting brown children in cages? And you know, you're just like, really? Like, you believe everything that you hear? And, you know, so I kind of got in this state of anxiety where I felt like I can't express how I feel. I feel like I'm totally, like, living in the closet again. And I couldn't really take it anymore. And so I felt like, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write what I call the definitive manifesto of everything that's wrong with liberalism and everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party. And I wrote it down, and then I decided to shoot a video and just recite it. And I created a video where I said what I had written down in the script, and I added a little bit of supplementary pictures and footage to the video. And then I thought to myself, I'm going to put this out on social media, and this way everyone will know how I feel. It's like I've just ripped the Band-Aid off, and here it is. And now anyone who has a problem with me can just leave all at the same time, and then the people who stick around, I'll know that they're my friends, and I know who is not my friend. But I thought, you know, there's more to this, I think, because I know there are a lot of people in this country who are feeling the way that I feel. They're feeling heartsick, some of them, because they've lost their best friends, or they've lost their parents or their children, or some people have lost their jobs simply because of what they believe in politically. And people are feeling like they are oppressed and they're not able to speak, you know, just tell the truth about how they feel. And so I thought, I'm going to put my video out and I'm going to create a campaign. And in this campaign, I'm going to encourage other people to do their testimonials, either make a video or write it down. And I created a Facebook page called the hashtag Walkaway Campaign. And in this group, I put my video and I told people what I wanted to do with this. Like, let's all come together and let's support each other and let's tell our stories and let's just come out together and be there for each other. And it just went crazy. I mean, people started leaving their video testimonials. People started doing written testimonials. And it's not just for people on the left who are walking away from the Democratic Party. It's also for people on the right who, even if they've been a conservative their whole lives, but, you know, if they're sick and tired of having the narrative of who they are hijacked by people on the left, and they're tired of being called racists and bigots and Nazis and homophobes, and so they're making their testimonials too. And they're telling the truth about what it means to be a conservative and who they really are, and telling people that despite what you've been told, we actually want minorities over here with us. We want black people. We want gay people. We want Hispanic people. It's just what the right doesn't want, and thank God, is they don't want the identity politics. They don't want the victimhood culture. They don't want the oppressor versus the victim thing. Because the truth is, this country that we live in is amazing. And no matter where you start off, we all start at a different point, and we all start with different skills and abilities and things that we come into the world with. But it's really up to us as individuals what we make out of our lives. At the end of the day, that's it. I mean, I think that everybody, if you work hard and you get an education and you have a good soul, if you're a good person, the sky is the limit, I think, for anyone in this country. And I mean, the proof of that should almost be if people look at what's happened to me in the last 2 months. I mean, if the right were truly as hateful and homophobic and bigoted as everyone keeps trying to tell me on the left that they are, how on earth could people be embracing me the way that they are? I've gotten tens of thousands of letters at this, or messages on social media at this point, from all different kinds of people, from all walks of life. I mean, old people, young people, all different races, all different genders, sexuality, and people saying, we don't care if you're gay. Some people say, we love that you're gay, you know, but it's just like, what you're doing is amazing. This campaign is amazing. I mean, I've had people tell me that they think that it's going to save us from a civil war.
Well, Brandon,
that
do you have a sense of, can you gauge and tell the audience about how many people, you know, have either liked your Facebook page or tweeted, or can you gauge the size of the movement? I know it includes quite a few blacks now.
Yes, which I love. I love. So at this point, we have about 175,000 on Facebook and tens of thousands of testimonials. Now, that's just on Facebook. Now, you have to bear in mind, a lot of people don't even like to use Facebook or go on Facebook.
I know, I realize that. So,
yeah. So then, you know, people are doing this on Twitter. They're doing it on YouTube. They're doing it on Instagram. And now you just see people. Some people are creating a sign that just says hashtag walk away and taking pictures, posting it on different mediums. So there's all different ways in which people are sort of embracing this movement. But I can tell you the only metrics I can really use to have any kind of accuracy is to tell you that in the Facebook page, we're somewhere, I think, around 175,000, tens of thousands of testimonials on Facebook, and that the according to hashtag, hashtag tracking apps. See, this is all over my head. This is why I have IT teams to take care of this for me, because I don't know how this stuff works. But there are hashtag tracking apps and sources that have shown us that the hashtag walkaway has been one of the top trending hashtags in the past few months.
Oh, I mean, believe
it's huge.
Sure.
And
I told you earlier how today I had someone take a picture of me in a Pam walkaway shirt. I posted it on Facebook this morning. On my public page, I have almost 2,000 likes and several hundred shares. And on my personal page, I have over 1,000 likes and almost 1,000 shares. And so, I mean, that's viral for just something that someone snapped a photograph of me in a walkaway T-shirt.
So exciting. And at this point, too, we have, you know, Donald Trump Jr. uses this hashtag a lot. James Woods, the actor, actually has the hashtag walkaway permanently in his Twitter bio. So, I mean, there's all these big names. Dinesh D'Souza, who I absolutely love, and we were just saying that his movie, Death of a Nation, is incredible. I met him recently at the premiere of that movie, and Dinesh reached out to me and said, I'd love for you to come. I'd love to meet you, because he said, you know, I've written this movie, or, you know, I've just made this movie.
Yes.
It's coming out. And he said, it's a very walk-away movie. And he's right. I mean, I feel like at this point, it's become such a part of the zeitgeist that it's like, just by saying walk away, people kind of know what you mean. That what you're talking about is that people are sick of the violence, the vandalism, the name-calling, the pouty, bratty, disgusting behavior. Like, people are ready to walk away from the left and the Democratic Party because they're sick of it. People are tired of this. It's not American.
Well, Brandon,
it's dangerous.
Brandon, I could talk with you probably for hours, but I want to leave and ask you one last question. Have you thought about running for political office?
Here's what I'll say about that. About a year and a half ago, I never, ever would have dreamed that I would be a conservative leading a nationwide movement for the powers of conservatism. So with that, I will leave you with this. Never say never. Never, ever say never.
Well, and I also want to tell you, there is a scripture. You were raised as Catholic. It's Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you. Plans are good and not evil, to bring you to an expected end. And so I think, I would say that God is using you mightily, and that you have a bright future ahead of you, and you are still a young man, even if you are 49.
Thank you, Carol.
All right. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. And remember, until next time, we the people can be the people who change America.